Chairman will be presiding, and with that, give me a moment to exit the courtroom, and then you may all proceed.
Good morning. The next case on the call is Trausch versus Hagemeyer. The Chief Justice is recused, Justice Papik is recused, District Judge Miller has joined us for this case. Council may proceed. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Terry Barber, and I'm here this morning representing Dennis and Janelle Trausch in this matter. It's an appeal from the district court that presides in Clay County, and it has to do with a claim by Mr. and Mrs. Trausch that a deed of trust that they signed was falsely acknowledged by Ms. Hagemeyer. The case was decided at a very early stage on a motion to dismiss. Actually, process was not served in the case. There was some consternation about which of the two bond companies that Ms. Hagemeyer had for her notary commission, whether it was a claims made or occurrence type of coverage on that bond. And so there hadn't been service. The trial court determined, based on the pleadings, that what the Trausches were asserting was a negligence claim, and that the filing of the complaint in the case was outside of the 4-year statute of limitations in 25-207(3).
Mr. Barber, you're not asserting that your clients did not sign the deed of trust, are you?
No.
So, I guess, what difference does it make about whether the notarial act was proper or improper?
Well, the distinction is whether non-judicial foreclosure can take place, or whether it cannot. In order to record a deed of trust with the Register of Deeds, it must be notarized, it must be acknowledged. In order for the non-judicial foreclosure process to operate, you must be able to make a notice of default to record,
but if
that
this
makes reference to a
I understand
process.
What the recording statutes say, but at this point you're not trying to upset the non-judicial sale, are you? You're pursuing a claim for damages, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And isn't one of the links of that chain somehow that improper recording was a cause of your client's loss? Is that what you're really arguing?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
As between the two parties, between the borrowers, your clients, and the lender, whether it was acknowledged or not would have been enforceable as between those parties. Could have gone through a judicial foreclosure anyway, couldn't they?
Yes, it could. The difficulty was in the timing. The Trausches had difficulty for some time financially and had sought alternative financing. And the speed with which the non-judicial foreclosure can take place ran them out of time to get refinancing with respect to some real estate.
They ended up in bankruptcy?
Yes, they did.
And the property's gone.
That's true.
It's not coming back, right?
Well, the property there was a non-judicial trustee sale.
So I'm still perhaps lost as to how how this act had any causal effect on some sort of loss or damage to your client.
But for the false notaries, the false acknowledgement that was created by the notary, the Trousers maintain that they could have been successful in refinancing. They had been working with two brokers to that end.
The absence of a notary is the source of the troubles?
The false acknowledgement has a causal connection to their loss of the property.
Because?
Because it shortened the time within which they could put other financing in place to take care of their obligations at the bank.
Let me fast forward, if I may. Are the plaintiffs time barred in this particular case in front of us?
We take the position no.
And what do you believe is the appropriate statute of limitation or limitations vis-a-vis the notary as distinguished from the bond company?
I think there are three. Well, let me back up. The cause of action that is stated in the complaint is a cause of action for the falsification of the acknowledgement. Talks about the time, it talks about how it occurred, and so forth. That sets forth the cause of action.
Now, against
the theory, the theory that it proceeds.
I beg your pardon, against which defendant?
Both defendants. Because it specifies the parameters of the bond and the relationship of Hagemeyer and her bond company. Ms. Hagemeyer being the principal, the bond company being the surety on a required bond in order to qualify her as a notary in the state of Nebraska. Now, those are the facts. That sets forth the cause of action. And as the court has recognized on prior occasions, a cause of action is based on the facts that are stated, and there may be more than one theory upon which the claimants can proceed. Now, that's my way of circling back to your question, Judge, about what we believe the appropriate statute of limitations to apply in this case might be.
And what is that one?
That would be 205.1. That would be the breach of a written obligation. That's the undertaking that the notary makes to the state when they apply for and receive the commission.
How many years is that one?
Five.
Five, okay. Any other ideas?
209 would be based on a theory of breach of the bond, and that's a 10-year statute of limitations.
Are the damages limited there, statutorily?
As to the bond company, yes. As to the surety. And the third would be the same statute, actually, that the judge referred to, except instead of subpart 3 being negligence, it would be subpart 4 being fraud. And that has the discovery tale on it.
What statute? I'm sorry. On which statute do you believe that the trial judge decided this?
25207 sub 3.
Sub 3.
She saw.
And that's how many years, please?
4.
That's a 4-year.
Yep.
And she also said, if it's 4 years on the notary, it's 4 years on the surety.
Yes.
Okay. Do you agree with that statement?
No, I certainly don't. And I think that there are a couple of cases, older cases, and they're cited in both of our briefs, involving stock and miser, and they're grain dealer cases. And I think that in that, this court's prior decisions discuss the interrelationship of the principal and the surety.
So stock 1 had to do with the dealer and stock 2 had to do with the surety. Is that correct?
That's right.
And in stock 1, the court decided it was 4 years as to the dealer, but in stock 2, the court decided it was 10 years as to the surety. Is that a correct statement?
That is a correct statement. I think that the basis that was maintained by the plaintiff against the grain dealer was that of an oral agreement, which would have put it in the four-year category. In here, what we're saying also is that we had further error. Not only was it decided incorrectly, in our opinion, the error was compounded by not allowing an opportunity to amend, to restate the theory or theories under which that cause of action for the falsification would be pursued. For the reasons stated in the brief, because of the things discussed this morning, we're asking that the decision of the district court be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Richard Garden, Jr. I represent Linda Hegemeyer, who was an employee of Cornerstone Bank. Ms. Hegemeyer was sued, as was RLI Insurance. I don't represent RLI. They were never served, and as a matter of law, that claim has been dismissed for failure to serve in six months, excuse me. So, Ms. Hegemeyer is a bank employee. She gets sued, and there are a variety of reasons why the lawsuit was defective. She writes to the Trouches and says, here's the pleadings that you signed in your bankruptcy that show why this lawsuit is defective. No response. She writes again and says, you know, please dismiss this lawsuit, because if you don't, I'm going to have to move for its dismissal, and I'll seek sanctions to recover my costs.
Because?
Well, I don't know if you've been sued. I've been sued by pro se, I'm going to call them crazies, but if you go to get a loan, I was sitting at a mortgage loan officer's office, and they said, are you a party to pending litigation? I said, no. Oh, yeah, by the way, there's that crazy case. Well, it does affect you to be sued. So anyhow, Ms. Hegemeyer moves to dismiss. She asserts five legitimate grounds. The district court could have ruled on any or all. The first was the statute of limitations. The plaintiffs pled negligence. There's a four-year statute, 25207. The second is, as Judge Castle was noting, 76238 sub 1. It says, an unrecorded document is still binding on the parties to the contract. That's all a deed of trust is. It is a contract. You don't pay, we get the property. That's the deal.
So the significance of that would be that formalities notwithstanding, it's binding.
That is correct, Your Honor. And in fact, there.
So
in
that,
my life,
in your argument, then, is that's not causal. The lack of formality
there is no
not
causation.
Causal.
Okay. And in fact, in my career, you rarely find what I learned to call a cow case as a young lawyer. And there is such a beast in this case. It's the decision of the Eighth Circuit Bankruptcy Appellate Panel in In Re Bowl, Nebraska. Exact same fact pattern. Applying Nebraska law, the bankruptcy court determined that because an acknowledgement was improper, the subsequent foreclosure was improper. The Eighth Circuit reversed, applying Nebraska law, and said, look, you're not challenging the document that starts the foreclosure. That's a separate document called a notice of default. You're not challenging whether that was properly notarized. In this case, there is no challenge to the notice of default.
Let me, if I may, digress and go back to some questions I asked opposing counsel on statutes of limitations. If the surety is out of the case, so this is a case against the notary, right?
Correct.
Would they share the same statute of limitations?
No, in fact, I think you would have to reverse your decision in Stock versus Meisner 1, the first Stock v. Meisner, where this court applied the four-year statute.
But are they joined at the hip? Can you have a four-year on the notary and a 10-year on the surety?
They are
arising
not joined,
from the same facts.
Again, according to this court, they are not joined at the hip. Because
under Stock 1, four years on the dealer in that case. But
correct.
In Stock 2, 10 years on the surety that was in place at the time of the crime.
Correct.
Okay.
Again, assuming you could state an underlying claim or cause of action.
So your argument would be that with respect to the notary, the remaining appellee, is that correct? It's 4 years.
That's correct. With regard to my client, Ms. Hagemeyer, it was a four-year statute on negligence.
Because the root of the complaint is 64-109, the negligence of a notary, even though they're seeking the damages from the bond.
That's correct, if I understand your question. The claim against Ms. Hagemeyer was styled as a negligence claim. The claim against the surety is styled as a claim on a bond. There are two claims. My client was only involved in the first cause of action.
Is the bond in this case an official bond?
This court has not so held. Official bonds cover judges, policemen.
But 64-109, it's a negligence against a notary. You can bring a civil action on an official bond.
Well, then
it says official bond there.
Then we can circle back to a statutorily created liability, which, again, has a four-year statute of limitations.
I beg your pardon, Justice Castle.
I forgot my question.
I'm sorry.
We're all at fault. I beg your pardon. Okay.
Can you say, once you're not suing the surety, can you say it's an action on the bond at all?
No.
It's an action against the principal and only the principal.
That is correct, and that's what the plaintiffs alleged, that she was negligent.
Were there any allegations of fraud?
There are. The word fraud does not appear in the complaint, Your Honor. So, again, applying the standard that, you know, a decision below will be affirmed if there is a correct reason. There are five correct reasons. We've talked about two of them. The third and fourth are really joined at the hip, judicial estoppel and waiver. Now, how all this litigation has evolved is there's a bankruptcy by the Trouches. They go to borrow $730,000 from Ms. Hagemeyer's employer, and they file a motion with the bankruptcy court where they say, our loan documents are valid, enforceable, fully enforceable according to their terms, and they're binding. Bankruptcy court awards the loan.
But let me back up. The process here was a motion to dismiss.
That's correct.
So all that stuff goes to what? Sanctions?
No, I think
Did the trial judge try and separate out
She should have considered under DMK biodiesel, matters of public record or matters embraced by the pleadings may be considered on a motion to dismiss. And she should have considered. I think she was being very careful not to convert this to a summary. But in any event, so you have a loan made on the representation to my client's employer and the bankruptcy court that these documents are fully enforceable according to their terms. They're binding. A second motion is then filed in the bankruptcy court, and it's a stipulation. And I'll direct the court's attention to Exhibit 7, page 29. And I did not include this in my brief, but I think it's extremely relevant. The appellants asked and stipulated to the bankruptcy court as follows. On or after October 1, 2019, the bank shall publish notice of a trustee sale of the real property encumbered by the loan documents for a trustee sale to occur not earlier than December 15, 2019. Well, I don't know how you can come before this court or the district court after you've said the bank shall publish a notice of sale. So that goes to judicial estoppel and waiver. And then finally, and my time's running short, we had claims preclusion. We would ask that the court affirm the decision of the district court, but alter its sanctions ruling to include counsel.
And that's your cross appeal.
That's our cross appeal, Your Honor. And the reason being is, look, my client had to ask twice. She's subject to a lawsuit.
And the standard of review is abuse of discretion, right?
That's correct.
And how do you get over that?
Well, again, I think it encourages bad behavior to rule otherwise.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Does Mr. Barber have time?
No, Your Honor.
No. That concludes oral arguments for today. You're all excused. Thank you.
Thank you.